From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is Cool Science Radio.
Science and technology that's accessible and entertaining.
If we can understand it, you can understand it.
I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
And I'm John Wells.
Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peake, here with John Wells. Our next guest is Casey Mullen, a doctoral student at the University of Utah. Casey is the lead author in a study just released that found more frequent peak air pollution exposure was associated with reduced math and English language arts test scores for third graders in all primary public schools in Salt Lake County during the 2016-2017 year. Casey joins us now to talk about this landmark report. Casey Mullen, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Casey. Good morning. Great to have you join us. Let's start off by talking about how we measure particulate matter. We refer to it as the thing PM2.5, but what does that really mean?
So particulate matter is the small particles of air pollution that are in the air. We have PM 0.10, which is a larger size. You know, usually when you breathe that in, those are the types of particles that you could blow your nose and see in your tissue coming out. But PM 2.5 is really concerning because it's so small that it's actually able to enter the lungs and enter the body and go to different parts of the body and potentially create damage in different systems.
And so, Casey, what you're saying is that when it gets to the size of 2.5, are you saying that it's that small that it goes into your system, or it's the size at which we really start measuring?
That's just the size of how small it is, where it's able to enter cells and move around the body. So it's much smaller than the PM10,
right,
which, you know, if you think about a piece of hair, PM10 is something you could measure on a piece of hair. But PM2.5 is incredibly small.
Yes, I didn't know how small it was, and I looked it up, Casey, and mm-hmm. It said that it's that the 2.5 is in width, the 2.5 is that several thousand would fit on the on a period in a sentence. That's pretty small.
Yeah, it's very small, and which is why, you know, it can be very dangerous for your body.
Yeah. So you have a very comprehensive report, so I have to applaud you on putting this whole thing together. There's a lot of pieces there. There's a lot of math. And one of the big takeaways is it's not necessarily your school location, because schools are in polluted parts everywhere in the city, but everybody is impacted by peak pollution.
Right.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So when we have this peak pollution, usually what is observable to us in Salt Lake County are winter inversions. You know, when you think about a winter inversion, you can imagine it, you can see it, because we've all experienced it if you live here. So during those times when we have these short-term peak exposures to air pollution, no one can escape that air pollution, and it is impacting all of our children in schools, no matter where they are.
So it's no secret to anyone who lives up in Park City, when it's beautiful and blue skies here, although I will say we are starting to get some of that air quality up here. But when you go to Salt Lake and you descend into that thick layer of muck, it's just takes common sense to tell you that it's not good to breathe. But can you talk about how, you know, filtration systems or anything like that in schools or other types of buildings exist or don't exist?
Sure. So that's actually one of our recommendations for one of the ways we can work towards resolving these issues. I can't speak to all schools in Salt Lake County. I'm not sure how their ventilation and air filtration systems are working, but absolutely it's something that we could ask legislators to push for investing in better ventilation and air filtration systems in our classrooms to try to help clean that air out while kids are inside, you know, when the air is really bad outside.
Yeah, so currently, though, that's just not something that exists within a school building. It seems as though I've heard of this sort of program taking place in certain school districts, but talk about the difference between school districts in the Valley, for example, on how they treat this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I actually am not sure. I'm not aware of how the schools are using their ventilation and air filtration systems. I think that if there are some out there already doing that, that's amazing. I know that since we've published this paper, we have had some people reach out and ask about, you know, is this something worthwhile that we should have the schools doing? And we have always recommended, absolutely, you know, it wouldn't hurt.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Casey Mullen, a doctoral student at the University of Utah. She is the lead author in a study just released that found that more frequent peak air pollution exposure is associated with reduced math and English language arts test scores for third graders in primary schools in Salt Lake County during 2016-2017. One of the tricky pieces of your study was to really try to focus on the air pollution side. So you had to create a school disadvantage variable that took into account Title I school status, Hispanic students, mm-hmm. percentage of non-Hispanic minority students who were Black, Asian Pacific, you know, those sorts of things. Can you tell us how you put together that variable? Because that's from my observation, it seems to be a tricky part of the study.
Right. So this actually was really interesting. In Salt Lake County, we have found through our research that the connections between social disadvantage and air pollution exposure are very highly correlated. So we couldn't even run our models with those factors as separate variables. We had to combine them. So what that means is where there's a presence of higher than average racial ethnic minority and low-income student composition, there's also likely an association with higher exposure to air pollution. So these factors are very tightly intertwined and overlapping, and we can't disentangle the effects of school disadvantage from the effects of air pollution because they're happening simultaneously and in the same places. So what that meant for our findings was that when we examined the effect that chronic exposures and the frequency of peak exposures had on third grade academic proficiency while taking into account these factors of social disadvantage, we find that the chronic exposure was associated with lower test scores until we added school disadvantage into the model or controlled for school disadvantage. So that's where those hard to untangle connections between social disadvantage test scores and air pollution exposure really come into play with one another.
And what most surprised you about your results, because I'm sure you had expectations going into this study?
Yeah, so I think that maybe not what was most surprising, but what we were maybe, I don't want to say excited to find, all air pollution exposure for kids is not good. But what we were sort of excited to find was this finding that stood out about the frequency of peak pollution exposure because of how concerning these inversions are and short-term air pollution exposure at higher levels really is for a place like Salt Lake County. So we thought that once we had those findings, those would be really locally relevant to residents. They would want to hear about this. This could get a conversation going. And also that this was relevant for policy. So for the peak exposure findings, you know, in our study, the peak level was at a lower value than the EPA standard. Our study level of particulate matter for peak days was 22.8 micrograms per cubic meter in comparison to the federal 24-hour threshold for unhealthy air pollution at 35 micrograms per cubic meter. And our study findings show that our lower level than the EPA standard was associated with lower academic proficiency. So really, this finding stands out because perhaps the EPA standard should be reconsidered in a place like Salt Lake County and throughout Utah.
Casey, the casual observer would say that, well, spring days in the Salt Lake Valley are usually better air quality. We know that in the winter, the inversions trap in that polluted air. The summer, it seems to get, as it gets hotter and hotter, the air quality seems to be on the decline. And then fall, can be decent. But it's sounding like really the bulk of the days that kids are in school are also coinciding with the days of the peak poor air quality. And so, were your study findings showing at all that as the air clears out, like after a big storm cycle, for example, in the winter, you know, was it exacting enough to be able to pick out those types of results on academic performance?
So it's really interesting that you ask that. For this project specifically, we did not examine further where, or I guess when, those peak days were actually happening. But we did, before this study, publish a paper that examined air pollution exposure during a relatively clean air day, a minor winter inversion episode, and also a major winter inversion. We weren't looking at academic proficiency during that study, but we did find that Salt Lake County Public Schools serving predominantly racial ethnic minority students were exposed to worse air conditions during all three of those scenarios. So as far as academic proficiency and the time frames, for this study, we don't know exactly when the tests were taken, but as you said, it's true that kids are in school during these winter inversion timeframes. So usually maybe November until February, we have the chance that we could have these higher peak exposures to air pollution. In the summertime, we do have ozone air pollution, though. So we don't ever really escape our air pollution.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So you're a doctoral student of sociology, and yet you were thrust into this sort of sciencey thing as you looked at PM 2.5. But what you're really looking at, and I'm sure that it's a goal of yours to expose, is why children and people in general of color are more exposed. And when it gets into things like zoning laws and what's permitted around certain neighborhoods to take place and where it would never be permitted, maybe up on the East Bench, I'm just curious about what you found. And it really sheds a lot of light on this topic.
Yeah, so our research examines environmental injustice related to air pollution exposure in Salt Lake County, and environmental injustices occur when communities or groups are disproportionately exposed to and impacted by environmental risks and hazards like air pollution. And environmental injustices contribute to social inequality. So when we are studying these sorts of things, we are one, looking at the scientific effect of what's happening, but we're also trying to unravel a story about, you know, a socio-historical story of what has been taking place. So during our research, we have uncovered also information about socio-historical processes of racism, structural issues involving redlining, you know, and where people have historically settled when coming to our valley. So more often we saw throughout the 1900s, when racial ethnic minority populations were coming to Salt Lake County, they were settling more so on the west side of our valley and on the other side of the train tracks, which also were places where there were job opportunities. But this all has a lot to do with these historical processes that were embedded in some racist relations that were going on.
Casey, you mentioned earlier ground level ozone concentrations in the summertime. And I wanted to ask you this. When you have pollution from cars and refineries, chemical plants and all that, and it reacts in the presence of sun, then it turns it into this ground level ozone concentration. We know what an inversion layer looks like, what it tastes like, what it smells like. Are the ground level ozone concentrations, are they odorless? Do we know that they're there, even though they are there? Is that something that that we may not know is there, but it's affecting us?
You know, that's a great question. I usually focus more on PM 2.5, but I do know just from being in school that when we have our worst ozone conditions, it does tend to be less observable. You know, you're right that the PM 2.5 hour inversions, when that air pollution is worse, it smacks you right in the face. You can see it. It's really hard to ignore. But in the summertime, when the ozone is potentially worse, you know, I don't recall seeing any bad pollution during the summertime. And, you know, we're out and about, and usually people escape the summer heat by going up in the mountains, hiking and things like that. But also that's where some of our worst ozone pollution actually is occurring, at higher levels.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay. So this might be a little negative, but I'll try not to be too negative. One, we have a ton of cars that are burning gasoline. We have two, we have a couple of oil refineries that are driving pollution as well. And there's, you know, chemical plants, and there's industrial furnaces that are burning. We also, in Salt Lake County, live in a valley. It's a captive audience. It's a bowl. And if it snows in the wintertime and the ground gets cold and the clear skies warm the upper atmosphere and the higher pressure comes into town, then that's when the inversion layer, that's when this whole recipe comes together. You know, it's like a little crock pot. It's just puts a lid on the whole thing for some period of time. So I understand what you said earlier about putting air filtration systems in individual schools, but the question I have is, even with all this data, how is Salt Lake County going to get out of this? The cars that are burning gasoline, people are holding on to their cars. There are people buying electric cars, but it's going to be another 5, 10, 12, maybe 15 years before a lot of those cars have converted to electric. How do we get out of this mess?
Yeah, so, I mean, the state of Utah has made some great strides toward improving our air quality. Most recently, the area's designation as a non-attainment zone was lifted because of our air quality improvements, but there is always more that can be done. So we really need to advance public health initiatives that help protect our children, because improving air quality with them in mind will improve air quality for everyone. So what we can do at home is talk to our legislators. We can call them and ask them to advocate for lower federal air pollution standards, even if that designation was just lifted as a non-attainment zone. We can still ask them to change the standards, because we're asking for it as constituents. We can ask the state to improve regulations that would prevent schools from being built in high pollution areas. Right now, there sort of are just suggestions about that. There are no actual laws protecting kids. We have the ventilation air filtration systems that we could ask our legislators to get behind, putting those in our classrooms and making sure all kids are protected in that way. We can retrofit school buses. We can prevent buses and cars from idling near schools. There's also this really interesting company called GEL. If you go to gelpeople.com, their website, they have one project they're working on called Reducing Air Pollution Through Urban Design. And with that, we can consult with Salt Lake City urban planners, which I know they are talking about this, about creating cleaner air routes for children to move around their communities with less exposure to air pollution. So the way they do that is they combine this, you know, hard data, scientific data about air pollution, and combine it with the lived experiences of children and their caretakers and what their daily routines are, their daily routes, what they're doing, and try to design cities to keep that in mind and protect our health better in that way.
Casey, what is that organization again? GEL People? How do you spell that?
Yeah, it's GEHL. PEOPLE.com.
Okay. Sorry, I had looked it up immediately as you said it and couldn't find it. Making cities for people. So GEL, that's a Danish word, I assume.
I think so.
Yeah, really interesting, some of the work it looks like they're doing. So I'm wondering, wondering, are schools ever, have you read whether in the Salt Lake Valley or anywhere else around the world, are they ever decommissioned because the air quality surrounding them, you know, and all the research that's been done makes legislators go, wow, okay, we need to do something else. We need to decommission this school, build it somewhere else. I mean, or you know, school districts themselves making this kind of movement.
I actually am not aware of if that is occurring anywhere. I think that that could be something that we should recommend. I don't know how we can make it happen, because if the school is exposed to worse air conditions, than that the neighborhood is as well.
Certainly.
And all of the people living there.
Yeah.
But absolutely, you know, logically, yes, that is what we should be doing, right?
Yeah, seems logical. You know, all this talk is very Aaron Brockovich-ish, you know? I mean, isn't it? And I do remember it was about a decade ago here in Park City, this power substation was going to... well, it was being proposed to move because of a development that wanted to happen right in what used to be on the outskirts of town and now is right in the middle of town. And so the substation was proposed to be put over by the affordable housing apartments. And mm-hmm. luckily, there were some people who really, really opposed it that were in leadership within the city, saying, you know, you can't just go putting a power station right next to the affordable housing apartments where all these people live just because those are the people who don't typically have a voice. And
right.
Luckily, there was that foresight. And it also turned out that for other reasons, the substation didn't even end up getting relocated and that particular development didn't happen in that form. So there are voices that... in leadership that should be crying out very loudly about this sort of thing. It's hard to have a lot of faith in the legislators here in Utah, because it seems like rolling back on restrictions on pollution is common practice rather than the other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, there is that side of things. I have seen I've seen Luz Escamilla talk a lot about air pollution, especially mm-hmm. in her neighborhood, in my old neighborhood in Rose Park. So she's definitely a great advocate for that. Mayor Mendenhall also usually advocates a lot for air pollution making conditions safer with air pollution in mind. I do think that their job is that they're supposed to work for us as, you know, civilians. And if we have loud enough voices and we make these points, they will do what we ask them to do. We just have to keep putting pressure. And I am really hopeful for the future of this valley. I think there's a lot of research coming out right now about our air pollution conditions and, you know, disproportionate impacts on certain community members. And I also read recently that the local politicians really care about local research and they're listening to what we're saying. And as long as we're doing research that keeps our community in mind, I think that we will absolutely start to see some social change happening. That's why I do this research. I'm really passionate about it, and I would love to see things change. And I will keep doing this and keep using my voice, and I encourage everyone to do that.
Well, that's heartening to hear. And, you know, I just wanted to make the point that in the Salt Lake Valley, there are many advocacy groups like the Physicians for Clean Air, and we've got Utah Clean
mm-hmm.
Energy, and we've got many, many organizations that I'm not even thinking of right now, an exhaustive list of. But if people are listening now and say, yeah, you know, it's time for my voice to be heard as well, what do you recommend?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that at least for me and maybe just other people in my age range, we are for some reason afraid to call our legislators and, you know, our representatives. But it shouldn't be a scary thing. You know, they want to hear from us, and it's not a scary ordeal to make that call. You just call and let them know, this is something that I care about. I would really like to see this being talked about, discussed more. I would like to see this particular bill going forward. You know, we need to be active in that way. And also, I think that having conversations as families and with our schools, with our neighbors about what the air pollution is like in our neighborhood and, you know, what can we do about it? Is there more where we live than in other neighborhoods? And is this a problem? Just starting those conversations and getting people talking about this more, I think can also help push for change to happen.
And your paper was published September 22nd of this year in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. What sort of feedback have you received so far?
So usually when we hear from community members, it's wanting to know, what can I do? And should I be concerned? And of course, you know, we don't publish this research to make parents afraid of what their children are being exposed to or the effects their kids are experiencing. But we do push this research because it is important, and we want people to know that there are negative impacts happening and there are disproportionate impacts happening. So usually, you know, we try to be uplifting when we talk to people, but also it is a serious issue, and we do want to make sure that people understand that there are avenues that we can take, like talking to our representatives. From the public, that's really sort of been the concern. You know, it's usually parents reaching out that want to know, what can they do?
Well, Casey, this is exciting, and we'd like to stay in touch with you to see how conversations continue, and this will encourage people to sit down at the table and to shine a light on all of this and to find out what the possibilities are. I mean, it is very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely going to continue to have research coming out, and we are excited that people care and want to hear more about it and talk about it. This is exactly what we were hoping for. And so, you know, we're excited to continue to do this work.
Casey Mullen is a doctoral student at the University of Utah. She's the lead author in a study just released that found more frequent peak air pollution exposure was associated with reduced math and English language arts test scores for third graders in all primary public schools in Salt Lake County during the 2016-2017 school year. And Casey, if someone wanted to read this, the study that you published, how do they find it?
Oh, that is a great question. It is publicly available.
Well, I'll just throw it in there. I mean, Casey Mullen and University of Utah, you know, sociology, you know, pulls up actually a handful of articles that you've either that mostly that you've co-written with others. And so it's all kind of different aspects of this same topic. And I think it's really interesting. So that's how I did it.
Thank you. Yes.
All right, Casey, thanks so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks for tuning in to Cool Science Radio.
If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us, give us a 5, and leave us a comment.
Take us along on your next adventure to the moon.
If you have any story ideas, please let us know at coolscienceradio@kpcw.org.
Thanks for listening, and hey, tune in next week.